you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
We get a lot of requests to do more fashion-related podcasts, and specifically the one that we're going to talk about today. So this person set in motion, really, the very concept of a design house and established many of the practices that are standard business for designers today. I won't go on a lot in the introduction because it all comes out in the story. This is a man who ran the Paris fashion scene in the late 1800s. He really was sort of the czar of fashion for France at that point. He's featured all over our Pinterest board. He is, in fact, Charles Worth.
Before we start, could I just say that I'm glad you're around to field all these requests about fashion history, because if it were me, I would be like, once upon a time, there was a garment and it went on people's bodies.
Which strikes me as hilarious, because the first time I met you, you were in a costume. So in my head, you're like a fashion nut like me, but
the costume things I can handle better than like the fashion things.
Oh,
you know,
to me, they're all tied up together.
To get on to the subject, Charles Frederick Worth was born October 13th, 1825, to William and Marianne Worth in Lincolnshire, England. The Worth family at that point was really well off. William was one of a long line of attorneys.
But things didn't quite stay so rosy. Early on in Charles's life, the tide of affluence really shifted. His father was an alcoholic and basically squandered the family fortune. And when Charles was around 11, he lost everything to the combination of drinking and gambling. And as a consequence, both Marianne and young Charles suddenly kind of were put in the position to have to support the family.
While his mother took on cleaning jobs to make ends meet, Charles, who was just 12, became a printer's apprentice. Printing didn't really suit him, though, and after a year in that trade, he went to work as a bookkeeper for Swan and Edgar, which was a textile firm in London. He later shifted to the silk merchant trade, working for Lewis and Allenby, and he stayed with them until 1845, when he was 20 years old.
And the entire time that Worth was working on the business side of the fabric industry, you know, doing bookkeeping and administrative tasks,
He was taking in a lot more than the bookkeeping. He was watching dressmakers and their fashionable clients select fabrics and choose designs, and he was learning as much as he could about textiles and the various qualities that separated luxury fabrics from more utility weaves. He went to art galleries and really vociferously studied the fashions of eras as represented through art. And he basically observed the entire world of contemporary fashion that was playing out in these fashion, in these textile houses that he was working in.
By 1845, he felt like he was ready to move out of the records office and into the actual world of fashion. So he left his job at Lewis and Allenby and moved to Paris. His first job in France as a sales clerk at Gagelin and Opéget was not only his first real step into the fashion world, but it also proved to be a really personal turning point as well. It was there, at the fabric and accessory shop, that he would meet Marie Vernet, who sometimes modeled the shop's goods.
And Charles and Marie fell in love. They got married in 1851, and she was still modeling accessories for the luxury shop at that point after their marriage. And Charles kind of decided to put all of those years of self-directed study to work. So he started to design and stitch gowns for her to wear while she was modeling the accessories, like the high-end shawls and laces that the shop provided.
This got the attention of several of Gagelin's customers who would ask about Marie's lovely garments. Wirt saw a potential market and started to pitch an idea to his bosses. He would make gowns to sell alongside the accessories that the shop was already well known for. In Wirt's plan, the shop would provide the raw materials and he would do all the work.
Okay, so for context, that may not sound particularly groundbreaking in the least to our listeners, but prior to this, there was really no such thing as walking into a store and purchasing a ready-made garment. So the idea of having a dress, look, this dress is done, would you like to buy it? Completely alien. Everything was made to order at that point. So the idea of marketing a finished gown was frankly radical. It just, no one had ever done it, and no one at that point even really thought it could be done. So this was before there was, like, uniformity of sizes. You couldn't walk in and say, hey, I'm a size 8 or 10 or 12, what do you have? It was more like, here are my measurements, make my outfit.
Well, and there's also little uniformity of sizes now.
Right. Well, but there's more than there used to be, for sure.
More than before.
And prior to vanity sizing, it was much more uniform. But unfortunately, this grand idea of Wirth's was not met with enthusiasm by Gagelin and Opéget.
But buoyed by the fact that his dresses were quickly becoming the talk of fashionable circles, Wirth eventually partnered with a Swedish man he met through his work. His name was Otto Boberg. Was after a decade of working for the accessory shop that Wirth set up shop with his new partner and a few dozen staff members.
So the business duo opened Wirth and Boberg in Rue de la Paix in the late 1850s, and the start of Wirth's shop wasn't really an instant success. You may have anticipated, like, he's so groundbreaking and people already are talking about him. It didn't really take off gangbusters like they had hoped. He had customers, but it just was not the blockbuster that he and Boberg had envisioned. He knew he was going to have to reach out to prominent and stylish people to get them interested in his clothes and build his reputation. So nowadays, for example, asking a celebrity who they're wearing is de rigueur on red carpets, but this was another concept that's pretty much entirely worth doing. No one really talked about designers. Like, they would certainly share, oh, I have a great dressmaker you could use, but it wasn't like with that level of, you know, cachet attached to it where they would be like, oh, this is the one. Rose Bertin a little bit, and we'll talk about her again a little bit later, but just not the thing to talk about your designer.
While out for a walk with Marie one evening, Charles noticed the Princess Pauline de Metternich of Vienna, and that was the wife of the Austrian ambassador to Paris. She was traveling in her carriage on her way to be presented at court. He was impressed with her demeanor and how she carried herself, and he thought she could be the perfect ambassador for him among the royals and the wealthy.
And within a few weeks, a meeting had been arranged. So he sent Marie to present the princess with a book of fashion sketches that her husband had done. And at that meeting, the princess ordered two gowns. She paid only 300 francs for each, which was certainly not cheap, but for someone of her rank, it really was not a terrible expense. And she also promised to wear one of them to an upcoming ball. So she kind of was in on the plan from the beginning of like, hey, it would be great if you would wear our clothes and show them to your friends.
The dress was white tulle with silver threading, and it was embellished with daisies and diamonds, which just sounds happy and sparkly to me. The ball was hosted by Napoleon III and Empress Eugenie. And Eugenie was a striking woman and arrived at the ball also in white tulle. And she had this garland of fresh flowers in her hair and a lavish spread of diamonds everywhere else.
And while, by all accounts, the Empress was certainly the belle of the ball, anything you read about her, and particularly about that evening, they talk about just how incredibly luminous and beautiful she looked. Many people regarded her as one of the most beautiful women of the day. But she did indeed notice the gown that Princess Metternich was wearing, and she actually inquired about it. And when the princess mentioned that it was made by an Englishman named Worth, and they discussed it briefly, the Empress then requested that he come to visit her almost immediately, the next day. And so with that, Charles Worth's career sort of took off at a really dizzying speed. But before we get to that, do you want to take a word from a sponsor?
Yes.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To get back to Charles Worth, he really tended to buck social conventions and to dress in a much more casual and eclectic way than you might expect for a gentleman of that time. And this was true when he went to Tuileries to meet the Empress. You would expect a man to be, or anyone really, in formal dress on such an occasion, but he had on casual clothing and a beret.
And we'll talk about it a little bit more later, but he really seems like he was maybe the mold maker for the bohemian artiste designer that has really been followed by numerous people, since. And I have to wonder if they're aping Worth, whether they consciously or unconsciously are doing so. You know, anytime you sort of think of, those people that sort of carry themselves with a little bit of pretense and they're artistes. I think Worth may have been the genesis point of a lot of the stereotypes that we have come up with around artists. But his timing, more importantly, when he met Princess Metternich, had really been impeccable because he had managed to get his foot in the door with the royal class at the same time that Empress Eugenie, with Napoleon III's urging, was really looking to up her game when it came to style and fashion. She wasn't unfashionable and she had style, but she really tended to be a little bit more simple than one would anticipate and what the people tended to desire in the woman who sat at the highest position in France. So it was really in her best interest to cultivate a more stylish image. And so while she had a natural style and she was by all accounts very elegant, she really needed someone to shape her wardrobe worthy into one that would be worthy of her station. And that is at the point where Charles Worth entered her dressing room.
During that first meeting, which was held in her dressing room, she ordered one evening dress from the designer. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it would work out to be the first of many.
Oh, yes. He ended up basically providing all of her clothes as time went on. And in addition to the wonderful timing of meeting Eugenie just as she was plotting a wardrobe overhaul, Worth was also inventing the idea of a fashion designer at the same time that court functions really required multiple wardrobe changes each day. And wearing the same dress twice was something of an image suicide. There are, in fact, stories of Eugenie withdrawing invitations to people after they had appeared in court and had not been stylish enough. So she then was like, hey, you know how I said come back next week? I didn't mean that. I'm going to withdraw that. And she was usually quite direct and said, like, you know, due to clothing that was unbecoming. So basically at this point, as he's getting there, Eugenie wants an overhaul. And for everyone else, kind of in the higher strata of social structure, if you wanted to hang out at French court, you really better have a closet full of incredibly sumptuous finery.
And once people knew that he was dressing the Empress, Worth was in demand constantly, morning and night. His popularity grew so quickly that the street outside of his shop was said to be constantly clogged with carriages. The shop itself was crowded with wealthy patrons who were there to socialize and to be seen in the shop, as well as to actually order gowns.
And for his part, Worth really basked in the spotlight. He would entertain high-profile customers, you know, in a group. He would sit there and chat with all the ladies. And he had this habit that to me sounds so horrible, but I can see where it would appeal to the society. He would call one or another woman, like whoever he picked at any given moment, in their little social circle forward, and then he would critique their ensemble head to toe.
It's like what not to wear.
Sneak attack.
Yeah.
I mean, I presume if you were going to visit him, you probably already tried to be turned out and look as good as you possibly could. But that sounds very scary to me. And sometimes he would be very positive and say, oh, you look beautiful. You know, this is all working. But he would also critique people and tell them, like, your outfit is horrible and here's what needs fixing. And while you might think this kind of behavior could potentially drive customers away, it did not. It kind of upped his appeal. He ended up designing not only for Empress Eugenie, but even the likes of Queen Victoria and Empress Elizabeth. He designed Elizabeth's coronation gown when she became Queen of Hungary. And so a high-end gown from the House of Worth could run as much as $10,000. Although there were customers and clients that did not spend that much. Some would spend that much in a year, but some would drop that much at a pop. And that's a lot when you consider mid-1800s. Also part of his sort of mystique or his cultivated personality, Empress Eugenie would sometimes butt heads with him about how a garment or a gown should be executed or what cloth should be used. But she basically always caved in to what he wanted to do, which is saying a great deal about his power. You know, he basically is with the most powerful woman in the country and going, no, 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 you're wrong. Just let me do my thing. And she would go, okay. She ended up nicknaming him the Tyrant of Fashion.
By 1864, so 5 years into his creative relationship with the Empress, Worth had become the official couturier of the French court, and it's estimated that his fashion house was producing between 10,000 and 11,000 pieces a year in gowns and outerwear to keep the finest ladies in France outfitted in the latest styles.
So with that level of output, obviously, he was not doing all the stitching himself. He maintained the integrity of his brand, though, by just being a really conscientious manager. He held his garments to the highest quality standards. He hired only the best seamstresses and dressmakers to execute his designs. One of the sort of signatures of his clothing was that the interiors of the garments had to be finished so well that they would rival the outside in beauty, like, there was no ugly interiors. Everything was beautiful inside and out.
He also used only the finest fabrics. His textile choices could really make a year for a weaver. Lyon had been known as a hub of really exquisite silk, and Worth took advantage of having such incredible fabrics so close by in his adopted home country. Textile mills would send Worth samples in the hopes of getting a lucrative order out of it.
Yeah, he really, you know, his word was gold in terms of the textile world. Like, if he endorsed a particular weaver, whether or not he did a huge order for that year, they basically were going to do great for that year. And as his fame and prestige grew, Worth, as you may have surmised from our anecdote a few moments ago about how he would critique ladies' outfits in front of their peers, could sometimes be a bit of a pill. His mannerisms would sometimes come off as affected. He kind of really did cultivate this personality of being eclectic, being a little bit nutty. He would often wear really colorful robes, and he always wore his signature black beret or a black skull cap. And at one point, he decided he was going to design his own coat of arms, which he did, and had it worked into the gates of his home. And in some ways, he became almost as famous for his ego as for his designing talent.
But, you know, none of that ever seemed to distract people from thinking his work was amazing. And so things were going swimmingly for him, and he was the darling of the French court until circumstances intervened, which we'll talk about after another brief break.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So back to Charles Wirth. During the Franco-Prussian War of 1870, the House of Wirth, like many high-end businesses in France, closed temporarily. Charles's greatest benefactor, the Empress Eugenie, was forced into exile, and the Rue de la Paix, home of the House of Wirth, actually became a hospital for injured French soldiers during the fighting.
But once the conflict had ended and the dust had settled, the House of Wirth reopened, surprisingly to even greater success. Although Otto Bobert was no longer part of the business, he had been uneasy about setting the shop up again after their first venture was so abruptly cut short due to the political climate. So Wirth bought out his share of the empire for 1.5 million francs. And while most of his French clients were gone, he still had plenty of wealthy fans from the United States and Europe who were happy to order gowns. So business was really booming, even though the climate was so much different. So much so that the tiny shop that started with just 50 employees wound up swelling to a staff of more than 1,000.
Yeah, we've heard it so many times before when we've talked about design houses, or, you know, people that, make their living in sort of extravagant arenas, that something will happen like a war and they never quite recover. But in fact, he's sort of the exception that proves the rule. He did great after the war. However, as his career stretched into the 1880s, his cachet started to ebb. When the groundbreaking gown maker died in 1885, he had really already been eclipsed by the next generation of designers, including Pequin and Doucet. Of course, there would have been no next generation of designers if Wirth had not paved the way.
When Charles Worth died, his sons Gaston and Jean-Philippe inherited the family business, and that worked out really well for a lot of years. Gaston handled the business side of things, while Jean-Philippe did all the designing. Through the years, other family members also worked at the fashion house that was started by Charles Worth. However, eventually, there was the anti-corset movement and a trend towards simpler lines, and those were led by previous podcast subject Paul Poiret. As that all took hold, the House of Worth found its business slowly dwindling year by year, and it finally closed up shop for the last time in 1956.
But I think to really understand the importance of Charles Worth's stature in fashion history, we have to look at some of the genuinely revolutionary ideas that he introduced. And we'll start with one that did not stick around, but it completely defined Victorian fashion for a lot of people, and that is the bustle. So over time, he evolved the crinoline, so the wide-bottomed dresses, into a partial crinoline, which stuck out behind a lady, so it gave her kind of a large rump shape and projected beyond that, while the front of her silhouette remained narrow for the most part. And when people today think of Victorian fashion, it is usually the bustle that springs to mind in the silhouettes. Like, they'll go corset, and then bustle is usually second. And that's all because of Worth. And just for the record, I love bustle gowns. I love, love, love bustle gowns. I have several.
You know, at the top of the episode where I was like, it's a garment, and it goes on your body. I also love bustles. And part of that is because of a costume class that I took that was all about draping bustles and different shapes that you could get with different bustle drapes.
I love them too. I know to the modern eye and to people that are not into historical fashion, they look ridiculous. I just love that silhouette. I can't even describe why. It looks beautiful. It's super fun to wear.
Well, and to be fair, there were people who thought it was ridiculous at the time. I remember editorial cartoons that were like of a lady with a snail attached to the back of her body. So other dressmakers were often dubious of new technology, but Worth really embraced the sewing machine as a way to expedite production without sacrificing quality. And he also used manufactured trims on his garments before people widely accepted that either.
Yeah, he was just ahead of his time in his visions for fashion. And in another completely new approach to fashion, remember, prior to this time, pretty much all garments were made to order specifically for the wearer. But Worth would often sell his original garment that he had made to foreign buyers, and he would also sell rights to copy and distribute it as, you know, the recreated style. So basically, he was selling the rights to make copies. So design licensing was born with him. And on a related business model, he would actually make ready-to-wear gowns to sell to department stores abroad. Department stores were a completely new concept. So, you know, the idea that he was like, yeah, I'll get in on this, and willing to take this risk and sell to them was really huge.
So despite being the designer of really lavish gowns for the elite ladies of France, Charles Worth was also the first designer to really turn a practical eye to the length of ladies' gowns during this time. The hems of Victorian gowns were just notorious for dragging on the ground and getting completely filthy anytime there was dampness or mud. And Worth thought this was really a pity, so he shortened the hems of day gowns to create what came to be known as the walking skirt. And these skirts really weren't all that short, but it was enough to stay lifted off the ground while still offering kind of a head-to-toe appearance.
And just in case we were not entirely clear, those were like the day gowns. For evening wear, it still was full length, but for getting about town and running your errands and going calling, you could actually, you know, stroll about without getting too mucky. And the House of Worth and Beaubourg is widely considered to have been the first true fashion house, and it straddled the line between being open to the public and also being very exclusive. So upon entry, customers were greeted by gentlemen in fine attire. The shop was decorated really sumptuously and beautifully. And then these customers would be brought to one of the shop's salons to see either a presentation of available gowns. They could also go to a different salon to view fabric samples and design sketches. Or they could go in this room to try on outfits that had specialty lighting designed for it. It was slightly dimmed, and it was meant to mimic the lighting that they would most commonly find at like a ball or another formal event.
Before Worth, no one had ever thought to create a whole series of garments to then present together as a fashion show. So the concept of a collection was another one of his innovations. Now there's this whole industry and culture around seasonal showings of different designers, and that really started with Charles Worth.
Yeah, if anybody watches Project Runway and they all talk about going to Fashion Week, and like, Fashion Week would not have existed in the form it was today had Charles Worth not been like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put together a bunch of beautiful outfits. I'm going to put on a little show and then people can order them. That's how it still works today. And it's all because he did this. So, because he was the first designer to offer a collection and market ready to wear gowns and produce a large volume of garments each year, it's also probably no surprise that he is the one that came up with the idea of standardized patterns. And this still holds today to some degree. Worth and his dressmakers and drapers developed a series of pattern slopers. So to oversimplify what a sloper is, it's like a basic block pattern that can then be modified. And these pattern pieces would work interchangeably with one another. So any sleeve or collar in the collection could be used on any bodice in the collection. And it really just streamlined the whole process of manufacturing these garments, but still maintaining a really high level of quality.
So the idea of adding a signature to a garment the way a painter would sign a piece of art was really unheard of until Charles Worth. He started doing exactly that with labels. And prior to him, the idea of telling someone who you were wearing would have been really odd. Would have been sort of like telling someone the name of your maid if they said that your home looked very nice. But the label became sort of a status symbol.
And some of this, of course, is also tied to industrialization. So to make a comparison to our Marie Antoinette episode and Rose Bertin, ladies in Marie Antoinette's era would never have said, oh, I'm wearing Rose Bertin, in quite the same way that someone would say, oh, I'm wearing a Worth. But part of that was due to the fact that, you know, if Rose Bertin made or embellished a dress for someone, everyone already knew it. She was sort of so able to be really choosy in her clients. You know, she really only serviced people of the French court. Worth certainly serviced the French court, but he also, like we said, was open to the public. So and he was also working in a time when the garment industry was diversifying. There were more choices for consumers. Industrialization was allowing a lot more garment houses to open up that weren't necessarily design houses, but just produced clothing. And also because he licensed things, there were also copycats that were not licensed that were starting to crop up. So wearing an original Worth did indeed have clout.
In 1868, Charles Worth established the official classification of haute couture. And to be able to claim status as an haute couture house, a designer had to be recognized as such by a division of the French Ministry of Industry, known as the Chambre Syndicale de la Haute Couture. Worth established both the chambre and the requirements that a design house had to meet in order to earn this honor. So to qualify, a designer of hand-finished, custom-made clothing had to employ at least 20 artisans in a laboratory environment and show a minimum number of new designs every year. Additionally, there were stringent technical and creative standards, and the list of designers allowed to use this label still exists. It's reviewed every year, and usually there are only about a dozen houses that are on the list at any given time. It's a phrase that's kind of lost a lot of its meaning in the modern vernacular, but it really represents the absolute highest level of excellence from both a design and an execution standpoint for garments.
Yeah, it's one of those things you'll see people talking about couture and mentioning haute couture. It's really much more specific than I think people realize, because again, like, you can't say most designers are haute couture. Like, Jean-Paul Gaultier is an officially recognized haute couture designer, but most designers are not. Again, this is a very short list, and it really does represent an extremely high standard. There was a video, and I'll try to find it so we can put it in the show notes, that is not particularly historical, but it is a video of sort of what goes into a modern haute couture gown, and you see all of the hours of painstaking labor that really, really technically skilled stitchers and artisans go through to apply embellishment and make sure every seam is perfect. And every seam, again, the inside is just as beautiful as the outside. So it really is quite a high honor and quite a level of excellence that's associated with that term. Whereas you will hear it mentioned on television and in film all the time, and it's not really exactly the correct usage of it. I mean, I use the sloppy usage as well. I'm not judging anybody. But just for clarity, that's the scoop with haute couture.
Do you also have listener mail?
Since we were talking about beautiful things today, I thought I would talk about a few of the beautiful postcards that we have gotten from listeners. I won't read all of the postcards, but I will describe them and talk about who they're from. The first one is from our listener, Jackie, and it is The Red Room. This is in The House on the Rock, which is in Wisconsin, actually, but it is phenomenal. And I kind of think we should start putting scans or at least photographs of some of these really amazing postcards on our Facebook page, maybe. And she just does this, wrote us a cute little note, but it's a beautiful, gorgeous picture of this incredibly sumptuously appointed room. I can't even describe all of the things that are in it. There are string instruments. There's some lovely taxidermy. There's some beautiful, ornate, gilted furniture. It's just amazing. It's gorgeous. My next postcard is from our listener, Lieutenant Jessica. She talked about how she was introduced to the podcast by her sister and how she is currently in Japan and she stayed entertained on the long flight and on some of the bullet train rides listening to podcasts. And she sent us a really, really beautiful postcard of mischievous kitties in kimono. And it's absolutely darling. It's an old woodblock and I love it so much. I can't even describe it. And then, again, I want to really put these up because they're so beautiful. So, and this last one, when I got it, I gasped because I love it so much. It is from our listener, Jesse, and it is a silkscreen illustration of, Elsa Lanchester as the Bride of Frankenstein that she did. And it is absolutely gorgeous. I may frame it. And she went back and listened to the Elsa episodes after we did the Bela Lugosi episodes. So she was in the mood as we did our Halloween stuff. She, for the record, is in the Spanish Dracula camp. We talked about in the Bella episodes that they had simultaneously filmed a second version of Dracula in Spanish at night after the main production would wrap for the day, and how there are some film historians today who think that the Spanish version is actually a better film. Apparently, Jesse is in that camp. So thank you so much for all of our listeners that send us postcards. I do want to try to figure out a way, time permitting, which is always the challenge, to get some of these really beautiful ones up on our Facebook page or elsewhere, just so people can also enjoy the cool stuff that you guys are sending us. I love it so much. So thank you. If you would like to write to us, really the best way to get your stuff seen, if you want us to address a thing, is via our email, which is historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also connect with us at facebook.com/MissedInHistory, at MissedInHistory on Twitter, MissedInHistory.tumblr.com, Pinterest.com/MissedInHistory. I cannot wait to pin a bunch of Worth gowns. There are already a bunch up there in our historical fashion board. And you can also visit MissedInHistory.spreadshirt.com, where you can get t-shirts, bags, mugs for your warm coffee that you will need this winter, hoodies that will also keep you toasty, etc. If you would like to learn a little bit related to what we talked about today, if you go to our parent site, How Stuff Works, and you type in Charles Worth's name in the search bar, you will get an article called How French Traditions Work. And one page of it does talk about fashion and how it mentions briefly how Charles Worth, even though he was originally an Englishman, he really sort of associated himself with France for the entirety of his career. So France sort of claims him as theirs. And he's mentioned in that article. You can also visit our history website, MissedInHistory.com, if you would like to look at our entire archive of episodes at show notes. Tracy has written a wonderful blog post on how to find any back episodes if you have a subject you're interested in and want to know if we did it. We used to try to search for things and send them people's way when they inquired about topics that we had already done, but the volume of mail and Facebook notes about that is getting to be a little bit more than we can possibly humanly keep up with. So read Tracy's fabulous blog post and you will know how to do that yourself. And if you would like to learn about almost anything your mind can conjure, you can do that at our parent site, howstuffworks.com, or visit us at missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.